This is May Brussels. This is broadcast number 597, May 16th, 1983. I want to say that before the program goes on with this regular broadcast and the tapes that go out by subscription to other stations, we are doing a half-hour radio talk show here, and it's really nice. I'd like to extend it to more time if Kazoo has it later. And if you like it, call the station and let them know. It's really nice to answer your questions and get feedback and add things that I forgot to mention, such as the broadcast coming up of Charles Manson and the Nazis. So keep in touch and let them know at Kazoo if you want some more of this or more time. I'll give the time and share it with you. Now into the news of the week. I forgot to bring in my broadcast, the page that goes with the broadcast a year ago today. So next week we'll double up. There was so much news I actually forgot to do it. First article of importance is Secret Pentagon Intelligence Unit is disclosed. We don't have enough of those, but this is the treacherous one. Beware, and remember, you were forewarned. This is from the New York Times, May the 8th, 1983. This is a special unit of operations separate from the Defense Department, separate from the CIA. This is called the Army Intelligence Support Activity. It has more power separated from the other two. Now, this was formed in 1980, but its role just came out recently when James Bo Gritz, G-R-I-T-Z, that former Green Beret, went off to Laos, and it turned out he was acting, in quotes, independent, and supposedly was given something like $40,000 from Clint Eastwood, who lives up here in Pebble Beach. He was part of this secret Army department. Now, I haven't had time yet to do a broadcast on Mr. Bo Gritz, but I have an article of his and some descriptions of what he did in Laos, and he said, "I don't mind if I start World War III." Now, the headquarters for this group, of course, is Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I'm not going to backtrack and tell you about the Nazis that came from Nazi Germany that set up Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and the Army Special Forces. Those were Hitler's Nazis, just as if you brought Himmler and Walter Rauch and SS Wolf over here. Hitler's Nazis set up a special division in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I told you also the information I had in pictures and diagrams of Mr. James Frankenberry stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and his role in practicing for what was to be the murder of John Kennedy, the crossfire, and the shooting in the window of General Walker that had a lot of subtle reasons for shooting him and not killing him that I'll go into later, the Walker shooting. Now, these people worked with the General Dozier kidnapping. That means they work with the Red Brigades. It means they work with Henry Arsan, A-R-S-I-S-A-N, who's part of Banco Ambrosiano and the largest drug gun smuggling assassination team in the world that also worked with Aja and the P2 Masonic group in Italy. These are the fascists from Italy because the Dozier kidnapping and the release was set up by these people, and the Pope shooting that involves Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, who work with the Green Berets and Special Forces, and Mr. Duberstein, who was murdered just 2 weeks ago from the CIA, the Defense Department. And incidentally, he also was involved in the Narcotics Division, and the Narcotics area is the group that's being exposed or should be getting the headlines of Henry Arsan, the Vatican, the Milan Mafia, gun smuggling, narcotics, and assassinations. They are located, as I say, in North Carolina. And the code name for this group, dig this, is the Monarch Eagle. The Monarch Eagle. You know, I was talking to a friend today, another researcher and student of history. She said in Poland, the eagle has the crown on top of it for Poland. But the minute I read this, I thought of the Romanovs and the Habsburgs, who do want to get back on their throne someday, and Mitchell Werbel, the White Russian, who supplies the weapons and the silencers for these assassination teams. What a title in the United States Army, the Monarch Eagle. As I put on the printed sheet that accompanies these tapes by subscription, the Monarch Eagle has replaced the Stars and Stripes. Horrendous story, superseding the CIA and FBI. Another story in the San Jose Mercury, May the 8th, U.S. dispute rages over secret wars and presidential powers. And this is for a San Jose Mercury story on how far can Richard Nixon and Mr. Richard Pipes from Harvard, his name isn't Pipes, he's Polish, he changed it so he wouldn't associate it like Brzezinski, and you wouldn't have too many Poles running the Cold War, going into the Hot War. This is an article on how much power, how many secret wars. Remember, Henry Kissinger had a secret war in Cambodia, and Kissinger and Kramer are still calling the shots. They have wars in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, the Honduras, everywhere in the world, and the countries that they achieved what they wanted, like Argentina and Brazil and Chile, are all going bankrupt. There's a story in the paper today, Chile's economy was better under the Marxists than the Chicago Milton Friedman system. Anybody could figure that out just sitting home and reading two books. You could figure that one out. Another scandal in Australia, similar to the Pentagon Papers here, Australia halts the disclosure of papers on the CIA links. Now, somebody in the Australian government, in the Australian Security Intelligence Organization, has exposed and infuriated Prime Minister Robert Hawke, the new Prime Minister, of papers going back to 1970, how Australia was sold to the United States. This is during the time period also of the Nugent Hand, at the heart of the Nugent Hand Bank, with their dope dealing and their death squads coming in from Southeast Asia and using the Australian banks. They're trying to stop these papers. They've cut them off. They say they're an embarrassment. It will involve Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, and they have silenced any more than the first paper coming out, the allegations of the CIA involvement of Prime Minister Gough, G-O-U-G-H, Whitlam, W-H-I-T-L-A-M. They got rid of him in November 1975, the CIA did, and runs the government there. And these papers were given to the equivalent of the FBI in Australia on how the United States has running prominent Australian figures for many, many years. Now, of course, this Hawks, I believe he attended Harvard, too. He's another person who attended Harvard. He has put a lid on that. Story out of Dallas Times-Herald. Dallas JFK exhibit will recall the past. This has to do with the anniversary of John Kennedy. In Dallas, Texas, two people, Linda Lynn Adams, L-I-N-D-A-L-Y-N, Adams, and Conover Hunt-Jones, have put $2 to $3 million into rebuilding the Texas School Book Depository. They're going to show you the walk from the staircase to the window where Oswald stood. Oswald didn't stand at that window, and there's no proof that he was there. They're going to show you the sixth-floor room to relive the past where a spent rifle cartridges were and scattered books boxes. Those could have been spent and scattered at any time up on the sixth floor. They're going to try and show you, for their $2 to $3 million, the window out of which Oswald shot when the fatal shots came over the grassy knoll in the Daltex building and crossfires that killed Kennedy. They're going to have a newly built outdoor elevators and a skywalk to carry visitors to the sixth floor. Oswald was never seen on the stairwell going down, and the elevator was broken, and immediately after he was having a Coke on the second floor when the police entered. They're going to show you all the things about Lee Harvey Oswald so that you are sure once again, 20 years later, this is where John Kennedy was murdered. Now, they've turned down an offer for the hearse that carried Oswald's body to the cemetery. They said no thanks. But other than that, they're going to relive for you another lie, another day, so what? That you can see it visually, that will make it more interesting for you. Another story, the court in Los Angeles has tried Robert M. Takasugi, T-A-K-A-S-U-G-I, the judge, has tried to lock up all the papers on John DeLorean, and there was a lawsuit by the Associated Press and various news media that you cannot lock up this information, that there may be discrepancies or lies, and the news media sued because the John DeLorean case is so top secret. Now, remember, when he took on Joseph Ball as his attorney from the Warren Commission, I knew that it involved the CIA and probably the Odessa network going from the Vatican to Ireland and the spy network. So there was, anyway, a lawsuit challenging the right of this judge to lock up all this information and they want it. And it's, interestingly enough, one of the judges on the appeals panel was Stephen Reinhart, R-E-I-N-H-A-R-D-T. And when he was put recommended as judge in Los Angeles, there was a lot of discrepancy and argument because Mr. Hauser, the main witness of the FBI Abscam probe, said that Mr. Reinhart worked with the organized crime and with various crime syndicate members, and they tried to get him off the panel appointed as a judge. He got the appointment, but he voted in favor of opening up these papers. So you never know which way these cases go. I would have guessed that he would have suppressed them if DeLorean is tied into the international narcotic gang. But the judge said, along with two others, open up the case. And one of the first things they found when they opened it up was John DeLorean's links to the IRA. Well, that again goes to the Otto Scorzeny network and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple and Mr. Samuel Cummings in London and the preponderance of weapons sold by our intelligence agencies and the use of his motor company and his connections. He hardly was ever in Ireland at all. The interesting thing is that British banks, the Queen of England and the British banks, loaned him many million dollars to open the factory. So I could see where they'd want to lock up the fact that they used the money and worked with the IRA. So anyway, the case is going to be a little more available. The information is available. And I want to do a lot more on DeLorean. I have a lot of good stories. I want to update that because I did a few broadcasts and we haven't even had a chance to update it. And several weeks ago, I did mention the Stanford faculty and the Hoover Institute. And this is one of my favorite places because of the preponderance of the fascists in this particular Hoover Institute and their influence on the campus. And I mentioned it 2 weeks ago and a little bit on the broadcast, the program we shared just before this broadcast began. The faculty are objecting, the students are objecting, and what they're calling it is, they use the word, it's like a monarchy. They're taking people from the Hoover Institute and putting them on the faculty of Stanford University. They had a hearing this week, and the institute, known for its conservative leadership, is making the campus angry. And they said that they're putting their members from the Hoover Institute into the faculty, and the department is becoming, they use the word, like a battleground of these particular conservative people, influencing the way the students think, where they want a more open mind. And they did compare it to a monarchy, which was pretty interesting. So this battle is continuing. It isn't a one-time shot, and I mentioned this for you. Now, one of my favorite subjects and not my favorite people, apropos of education and then leading into the remainder of the broadcast, I want to talk about the Howard Hughes story and the links to the John Kennedy assassination, continuing on who really killed John Kennedy. Cambridge, Massachusetts had a mini demonstration of Japanese and Jews who objected to John J. McCloy setting up a new German-American scholarship at the university there at Harvard. Now, if you want to know about John J. McCloy and you don't know enough about him and you don't have my broadcast number 584, that was February 14th of this year, and 585, which was the following week, February 21st, I did quite a bit on John J. McCloy. And one of the items of his horrendous career was that he was the man behind Henry Kissinger's career, handpicked along with Fritz Kramer to put Kissinger in Harvard and then into the Defense Department to start our military coups, warming up with the Shah of Iran, putting him into power, and the Nazis and the Pahlavis, and then moving on to influence all the other major foreign policy decisions through the ages. Now, John J. McCloy has gotten a funding for Harvard from the Volkswagen Corporation, of all things, Volkswagen Foundation of Hanover, West Germany. $2 million will start the trust called the John J. McCloy Trust. And what he's going to bring to Harvard is 10 German students each year, scholarships to Harvard. 10 Germans are going to come to Harvard. Now, if you think what Henry Kissinger did in Cambodia and Laos and Chile and Brazil and the Dominicans and Peru and go to Jonestown and Guyana and the Middle East, look at the Middle East today, the countries that are about to be decimated and maybe to trigger an atomic war and the death of Mubarak in Egypt and the long list of murders in Pakistan and all over the world. I mean, the numero uno killer, making decisions of killing Henry Kissinger, traveling around. He was appointed Harvard by John McCloy after the war and given the scholarship by Harvard over there. Imagine 10 little Kissingers. Now, are they screened? Are they children of the SS? Are they the children of Goering and Goebbels? Are they the children of the Hitler Guard? Who are the 10 that are going to be going to Harvard every year from Germany? Can you imagine them? If Mr. Pipes came from Poland and the Harvard Department of the Soviet decision-making influences our National Security Council or State Department, can you imagine 10 Kissingers every year breeding those? Well, that's what happens when you don't use any melathion on those people to begin with. When you don't spray them out and use their gases like they use on other people, you get their breeding like flies, and they're going to bring in 10 Germans a year. There at least should be some description of their background and family and were they in the SS. An example of continuing with the families is an article in the Houston Post last week, May the 8th, on Mr. Jaworski. Leon Jaworski was active supporting the Nazis. He was at the Nuremberg trials, laying the top Nazis off. He was on the Warren Commission and covered up the Nazis and the organized crime syndicate. He was at Koreagate, covering up the payoffs of our congressmen and the entire buying off our Congress by the Koreans and with the Reverend Moon. He was head of the Senate Watergate Committee, covering up the major crimes of the CIA, even the plane crash of Dorothy Hunt and the Howard Hughes connections to Bebe Rabose and Richard Nixon and the Chappaquiddick affair. Leon Jaworski, he dies this year. So after he dies, what comes? Another little Jaworski. His name is Joe Jaworski, and he lives in London, and he tells about in the 1970s, he was thinking there was a lack of leadership in this country, so he wants to take on leadership like his father, Leon Jaworski, the special Watergate prosecutor. He said, our country used to be viewed as a world leader. People were concerned that we're not acting with his leadership. So now he comes back to Houston, Texas, to get top people like Jesse Jones, the banker and lawyer, James Elkins Sr., the same ilk as Leon Jaworski, and he's touching bases now with new people. He's in Houston. It's late 1980. He's armed with grants from the Houstonian Foundation. He's returned there, and the MD Anderson Foundation, that's the CIA foundation that his daddy worked with. He quit his law practice and creates an institution about the leadership of the nation. Now, in his endeavor, he says he has Thomas Cronin, C-R-O-N-I-N, an author and political scientist at Colorado College. John Gardner, former Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. John Gardner was one of those men that was on the institution, the Rockefeller Institute, set up for Henry Kissinger at Harvard that I spoke about last week, the military defense department people, and how Henry Kissinger could meet regularly with them and influence and taint their thinking. John Gardner was one of those, so now he's going to be at Houston. It says this is the beginning of the American Leadership Forum, a nonprofit Houston-based organization supported by corporate largesse, that's corporate profit ripoffs, L-A-R-G-E-S-S-E, that's known as taking your money and getting it tax-free to form their think tanks. And Jaworski will be the forum's chief executive officer, and it'll open chapters in Hartford, Connecticut and Atlanta and 25 cities within the next 5 years. And he has a fellow who came in from Los Angeles who's going to help him, Mr. Krasny, K-R-A-S-N-E-Y. Mr. Krasny's from Los Angeles. He brings in that element, the old Lincoln Club and the old J. Walter Thompson. And Krasny joined this forum last year after leaving his job as Los Angeles consultant to Atlantic Richfield. And he's one of 18 people chosen, mostly in their 40s. The year-long program calls for fellows to spend 25 days in forum activities, including lectures, seminars, an outward-bound trip to Colorado, and schedules for the summer. So you get rid of one Jaworski. He dies off. Little Leon goes to the great beyond. And what we end up with is another Jaworski. Joe, right? Same CIA foundation, same people, same thieves, same liars taking over the country. They got a lot of kids, and they're going to pop up with the funding, the education, the think tanks, and take over this country, or they have it, just continue it. Now I'm going to, for the remaining 40 minutes, talk about a segment that has to do with who killed John Kennedy and how it was covered. But to me, it is the most interesting aspect of the entire assassination syndrome. We could do 1 hour a week for 52 weeks and not exhaust it. But next week, I'll give you a list of books on Howard Hughes. I'm talking about the Howard Hughes Organization. I will get back to the Young Americans for Freedom with the Joe McCarthy story and Colonel Willoughby and Robert Morris. I have so much information on that, and that all links to the Howard Hughes. And I want to do some more on the Hitler Diaries. That is far from dead. I've got some amazing articles and stories for you. But because of the obituary of Chester Davis this last week, I can't pass up the opportunity to talk about Chester Davis and the Howard Hughes Organization. It's timely. Not only did Chester Davis pass away, he was the attorney for the Howard Hughes empire, and then several years ago they siphoned him off after Howard died. He was in charge, still in charge, of the Howard Hughes Medical Institute in Florida, which is the entire profits of the Hughes aircraft with their billions of dollars of contracts from the United States government. He's a pretty important man. But the non-notice or the little attention that was paid to his obituary is absolutely shocking, because sometimes when a prominent person dies like this, you get front page stories. I've never seen a person of such great importance to America and to the business world and mentioned in so many books get so little space and following 4 days after he died. Now, Richard E. Sprague, S-P-R-A-G-U-E, wrote a book called The Taking of America, 1, 2, and 3. And he wrote an article in 1976 for People in Pursuit of Truth called The Power Control Group and How It Began. And he lists 16 items of the Power Control Group, starting with the assassination of John Kennedy and then controlling Lyndon Johnson, then moving Johnson out and murdering Robert Kennedy. But the point that's missing in the takeover of America is what preceded John Kennedy's death and then the continuity afterwards, because the secrecy of the Hughes Organization, as I say, is the most amazing phenomena of the entire era. I don't think there is anything to equal it in American history. There were no secrets on Hitler, on how he came to power or where he was every day or what he did, but the secrecy and the power of the Hughes Organization is absolutely amazing. Now, there are three states bickering for the Howard Hughes will to settle it right now. One is Texas, in Houston, Texas. The other is in Nevada, and the other is in California. But the very week that they are going to start making these decisions with a, it quotes, impartial judge from Michigan, from Detroit, Michigan, Mr. Chester Davis died. Now, the Houston Post had a story 1 inch, just 1 inch. Here's a man where the Hughes Empire, running the Hughes Empire, the Hughes Tool Company from Houston, Texas. He sold it in 1972, the year after I said was Howard's demise, and they pretended he was still alive. He was active financially in Houston, Texas, because they're fighting for the will and the probate to be in Houston, Texas. Here's the whole story from the Houston point of view. In the middle of a page in where the obituaries are and a lot of small columns, former Hughes lawyer dies. Chester Davis, personal attorney to Howard Hughes for the last 16 years of the late billionaire's life, died at the age of 72. Davis, a native of Rome, Italy, was suffering from heart problems. He died Thursday in his sleep at his thoroughbred horse and dairy farm near Unadilla in central New York. Unadilla. It's very funny. Chester Davis milked the American people for 15 years plus, 15 of Howard's life, and then on to the present. Certainly, it pertains to the Howard Hughes case from 1960 to 1983, and he dies on his farm where he's milking dairy. It's a dairy farm. So he goes from milking us to milking the cows, and that's what he does best, is milking. Okay, San Francisco Chronicle, just before I came on the air last week, such a little notice on page 19 that I passed it up on the obituaries, to tell you the truth. I think I'm a good reader. I missed it. David Emery called me and said, did you see Chester Davis die? And this was about the same story, that he went to work in 1960 for Howard Hughes. And he was general counsel to the vast business interests, heavy equipment, aviation, hotels, gambling, casinos, and real estate. and he helped run the Howard Hughes Medical Institute in Miami, which owns all the stock to the Los Angeles-based Hughes Aircraft. It's a little bit more information, because if you ever heard of anything the Howard Hughes Medical Institute does, it's a giant ripoff for the Hughes Aircraft that goes to the Institute. Have you ever seen a scholarship or a grant or anything they've done to make life or science better? I haven't seen its name in the medical journals of any place, yet it's the total tax deduction for this huge, huge institute, okay? Another story, the Los Angeles Herald Examiner. Now, the Hughes Corporation, they the Summa Corporation is in Irvine, and there's one in Van Nuys. There's a large corporation in Irvine, California, the Romaine Street, where the headquarters, the multi-electronic control system on Romaine Street, the aircraft in Santa Monica, California person, Los Angeles Herald, again, about three sentences, that he came from Rome, Italy. He died on his dairy farm. At the time of his death, he was the executive for the Medical Institute, which owns all the stock in the Los Angeles-based Hughes Aircraft. Just a couple of sentences. And the New York Times always does a little bit better. Chester C. Davis, lawyer, is dead, high associate of Howard Hughes. And then it tells how he was the general counsel and was in charge of the Summa Corporation, the major holding company. He was a director of Mr. Hughes Holding Company. Incidentally, Howard's name wasn't on the Summa Corporation at all. They formed that, these dogs, took it over and formed it and didn't even have Howard's name on it. Sold the tool company, formed the Summa Corporation. If Howard lived or died, there's not a thread of evidence. And I will read you some documents next week. Some of these holdings and corporations, they hadn't had board meetings since 1943. Totally private, and got together and did their own shenanigans. That tells how he helped with the legal battle of TWA. Now, that is an interesting story. He came in, and Howard's dream was to own TWA, and through a lot of finagling, Howard lost the TWA airline, and Chester Davis was the attorney for Howard Hughes. Then there was 535 million buckaroos, and these scheming people took that profit and take a man, not a man visible that you can see or fingerprint or know or recognize. Davis didn't see him. Robert Mayhew didn't see him. Dean Henley, after for the last 15 years, didn't see him. Nobody saw him except two nurses who said it was Howard. And they took $535 million and took a train into Las Vegas on a Thanksgiving night and start buying up the town, the skimming money, the politicians, Senator Cannon, Paul Laxalt was the governor. This was the slimiest transition, and I'm going to give you a year-to-year move on how this took place, including the umbrella for the political assassinations and how they were done under the supervision of these people. Mr. Chester Davis, according to this obituary, in 1968 was in a Wall Street law firm of Davis and Cox. Then another firm merged, Jacobs, Persinger, and Parker. It tells how he came to the United States. His mother married a man named Chester C. Davis, and he took his name. Chester Davis became an American citizen in 1936 and took his stepfather's name and called himself Junior. Went to Princeton and went to Harvard, graduated in Harvard in 1936, and kept up his ties to Harvard and Henry Kissinger and the whole gang. Then we get into the Kramer-Kissinger. He was the Princeton Harvard connections and the mafia connections from Italy. The Lucky Luciano and the John Roselli, the whole gang, merged with Robert Mayhew. He was the important man because he was the Wall Street attorney, the Harvard graduate, the Princeton man who helped Howard lose the TWA. I don't say purposely, but Howard lost it. And then Howard was lost too after that. So with all the cash, Howard wasn't seen, and these people kept this empire going and going and going. Now, there's a new book out. We have about 1 minute. Now, I haven't seen the book. I just want to tell you about it. It's called The Attorney Conspiracy by C. Terry Klein, Jr. The blurb says, why would the deputy director of the CIA assassinate the richest man in America? Does that whet your appetite? I'm going to try and get it because I'll bet you it is about Howard Hughes. Now, we'll take a one-minute break and then get back to the subject of Howard Hughes, the American assassinations.